started a digital marketing agency, and we've had that agency now called Yoko Local here in Las Vegas, serving clients mostly here in the United States for the last 11 years. And we've been very successful in helping customers, our clients, small and mid-sized clients, generate new high-quality leads as well as customer acquisition using the power of the internet and social media.
Hey, welcome to the Business of Sales. I'm Morris Sims, and I'm going to be your host for this podcast. Are you working as hard as you can, putting in just as many hours as you possibly can, but your income and your business, well, it just doesn't seem to be improving the way you want it to? It's just not growing as fast as you'd like. Well, I help business owners like yourself become more efficient with running their business and more effective at making sales. Because when you do both of those things, then your gross revenue goes up, and when that happens, everything else comes into play. Who am I to help you with this? Well, I've been a successful sales professional, I've trained professional salespeople, and I've led the development department that trained over 12,000 salespeople with a staff of over 200 all across the country. I started my career barely breaking $25,000 a year, and if I was lucky, I could get 1 or 2 weeks off. I retired earning almost $500,000 a year, taking at least 5 weeks off every year. I can help you get your business to where you want it to be. On this show, our guest and I are going to share some practical ideas with you to help you grow your business and see more of that revenue become income for you and your family. I'm here to help you. So let's get this show started. This week, our guest on the Business of Sales is Daryl Evans, and Daryl is a serial entrepreneur. Now, what that means is he started a lot of successful businesses, and that means that he's got some great ideas to share with you today that are going to help you in a very practical way improve and grow your business. Daryl, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Morris, I'm super excited to be here, and just a tad bit of thought on that serial. All of them didn't go quite well, but, you know, that's part of the learning.
You know, and I could make some kind of a old father joke about cereal and Captain Crunch, but I'm not going to go there.
That's all right. I know what Captain Crunch is. We ate a lot of it as a kid. I know what you mean. I'm ready to rock.
So, Daryl, tell us a little bit about you. Where did you come from? How did you get where? Who's Daryl?
You know, Morris, thank you for the question. I'm just a guy who, at its core, is just somebody who's loved getting better every single day. I've enjoyed helping people along the journey of my getting better and then helping people when they had sticking points do the same. But, you know, I started in business at an age of 20. I got an early opportunity in leadership at a fast food company that is pretty popular here in the United States, a college kid's friend called Taco Bell. And that was an early opportunity. I actually started as a fry cook, and a few years later, I had keys to my own restaurant. That was not planned. I just learned that if you prosper where you're planted, people see things, and people saw some things in me that I didn't even know about myself, and ended up funding my college education that way. But entrepreneurship was always a topic for me, and so I started a couple businesses in my early 20s, became a real estate agent, started a business out of the trunk of my car at the swap meet. I was just this hustler, right? I wanted Jim Rohn. I didn't hear it until many, many years later, but there was just something that said, profits are better than wages for some reason.
Oh, and isn't that the truth? Yeah, absolutely.
And so fast forward, I finished college with a degree in finance, thought I was going to go work on Wall Street. Just family and life dynamics suggested that wasn't the best thing. And so I started in the world of real sales, in the world of sales, no check, no backstop, no buffer. I enjoyed the run. I learned some really good skills. I learned the very core basics and essence of what it took to be disciplined, commit to yourself, and follow a simple process, which is what I think sales is. But that industry wasn't for me. And I ended up moving into the real estate back into the real estate and mortgage lending industry, which I did for 12 years, ended up co-owning a mortgage company and was very successful there. 2008, 2009 comes along. And of course, we had a pivot in the road that we had to think about and readjust to. But Morris, for me, in 2003, 2004, things got interesting with the way consumer behavior was. And I remember getting my first smartphone, which was a BlackBerry device. This is pre-iPhone. And something just clicked for me and said, something is about to change for the history of the world. And of course, I didn't create any of these devices, but something about, I've been a student of consumer behavior, and it's just, it hit me that the world was about to go digital in a major way. And so I got really fascinated by online customer acquisition and started an online marketing division in our mortgage company in 2006. And fast forward to 2010, I met my business partner in 2008, but in 2010, we both left the real estate and lending industry. He was in the home building side, and started a digital marketing agency. And we've had that agency now called Yoko Local here in Las Vegas, serving clients mostly here in the United States for the last 11 years. And we've been very successful in helping customers, our clients, small and mid-sized clients, generate new high-quality leads as well as customer acquisition using the power of the internet and social media.
Wow, that's outstanding, Daryl. That is just really cool. Now, our audiences, chances are majority of our audience is financial services professionals. So I'm going to let the cat out of the bag here. That first sales opportunity you had was in our industry, right?
It was. I had a great opportunity to go work with Northwestern Mutual in 96. I think I was there from 96 to mid 98 or even early 99. My memory has it. And I attribute so much to those early years at NML because they really talked about, and by the way, prior to that, I'd already been in real estate. I'd had a real estate license. So I'd already been to some trainers that had been really good in the world of sales, the Zig Ziglars, the Tom Hopkins in the real estate space at that time, and Brian Tracy, of which I adore them tremendously. Obviously, Zig has passed on, rest in peace. What I learned in NML were a couple of things, and it really became a philosophy of productivity and success, and that is to wake up every day and control the controllables. They taught us a very simple model that simply said your job from 9 to 10 is to be in your seat, and your job is to set 2 appointments a day. 2 appointments with people that you hadn't had a chance to meet with yet. It wasn't to sell insurance. It wasn't to sell financial service products. It wasn't to sell CDs or mutual funds or disability. It was to set 2 meetings to go out and have a conversation.
Hey, y'all, hang on for just a second. I got something I just got to tell you. I'm giving away some free stuff, all right? Free stuff. I've got a copy in there of my ebook, Practical Influence, with ideas to help you improve your influence with other people. I've got some great marketing and prospecting ideas that are on an audio file, so you can listen to it while you work out or drive or whatever you'd like to. And we've also got some stuff in there on planning for 2022 to help you make 2022 your best year ever. Just go to morrissims.com/free stuff. That's morrissims.com/free stuff and get your free stuff. It's just that easy. All right. Now back to the show.
I remember it to this day. Introduce yourself, share a little bit about what you do, and get to know a little bit about them. That's it. Now, what happened is obviously you'd have a number of those meetings and you set up 10 of those a week, if not 20 of those a week. If you're really top, you're setting up 30 of those a week, and you'd keep 50% of those meetings, as you know, and before you know it, 2 or 3 or 4 of those every week needed or wanted to have a conversation. And so I learned the discipline of being diligent about your daily practice. And before you know it, I was actually in the top 6%. I think at NML, they had an award for whatever your first year of production was. And I was in the top whatever percent of that class. But again, as I mentioned, I didn't feel like that industry was the best fit for me in the long run. And so I took a lot of what I learned and became fairly successful with the mortgage and lending and real estate side of it.
Do you find that it's really the same process, Daryl? I mean, you're going out and you're meeting people and you're building a relationship. It seems to me that's still what it's all based on, is building a business relationship.
Morris, it is. Let's just think about the dynamic of what has happened with the internet. I mean, what we know, and I think most salespeople in any industry, but specifically in financial services, people do buy the company that you are selling the product of, meaning the big industries out there, right? They're named, they're trusted companies. You know, people know that those companies are going to exist, but they're buying it from you. They're buying you. I've always said that if you're in professional services, if you're selling a professional service tied to a product that's tied to a big company, the person is still making a decision to do business with you. So it's about, do they know you, do they like you, and do they trust you? And are you committed to the industry? Because they don't want to buy and have 13 agents or 13 professionals servicing their account. the world of digital, which is what I spend a lot of time doing, especially with professional service firms like financial services. Obviously, there's some challenges there with some sort of, you know, a little bit of some compliance issues that you got to work through. The goal of what we do digitally for professional service firms is try to help build their expertise, build the like, know, and trust factor in advance of the face-to-face meeting. And you can do that with social and with video and with educational content. And if you can build that trust factor in advance of that first meeting, the way I would do it in 97, you can speed up the customer acquisition process done effectively.
And it's all about adding value, isn't it? I mean, we're going to do this stuff digitally, but I'm still working to try and add value to the world out there so that they will know and trust me and take my call when I call them, or be willing to go have a cup of coffee with me if I ask them to go have a cup of coffee.
Of course. Of course. The idea of sales sometimes gets a bad rap, and not sometimes, a lot in my last 20-something years. It's a bad rap. The reality is there are some characters in the industry that are only self-serving about what it is that they want.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that when we put our interest into helping the other person get what they want, Zig said it best. The Bible says it another way, right? If you help enough other people get what they want, you'll ultimately get what you want. And that process is a law, as far as I'm concerned.
It is. There's no doubt about it.
There's no question, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so when we think about it, the idea is, are we showing up with the intent of serving? Like you said, are we able to provide value? And I think with financial services and specifically, and I was in a financial service field, although it wasn't insurance, as I transitioned in the mortgage lending industry. If you think about the process of the mortgage, most of your audience has probably heard about the process, if not gone through it multiple times. The reality is it's painful. It's not the best process on the planet. It's gotten a little bit better in the last decade or so, but it was not the funnest process to go through. What I often mention to people and thought about and think about when I taught salespeople myself and when we think about it on digital is, how can you become a resource to this individual to remove the frustrations, the challenges, the pitfalls? How can you remove those obstacles that they're going to face en route to what it is they want? And if you can do that smoothly with intention and with purpose, it's amazing how many people say yes to your purchase offer. When you ask them the question, would you like to do business with me? They just say yes. And it's because that you've built up that trust, whether that's in advance, during the process. And I remember a funny story, Morris, one of the longest sales that I've made, meaning how long had I had this customer or prospective customer in my database before they purchased? It was 33 months in the history of everything I've ever sold.
Oh my.
33 months. I stayed in touch with someone, and people say, well, Daryl, what were you doing staying in touch with somebody for 33 months? And I said, it's this little thing called email.
That's right.
And so when people say, well, what were you doing 33 months in email? I said, well, here's what I wasn't doing. I wasn't asking them to buy a home loan every week when I sent them an email. They were like, you send an email every week? Well, how did you do that? It's called automation.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get all the emails? Well, I wrote them, and I wrote them one time. I didn't do them every day, so I wrote them one time. I didn't write them all in one sitting. That's why I understood the power of automation, because I'm like, hey, if I'm going to answer the same questions over and over and over again, and at this time I'm in the lending industry, and I'm doing anywhere from 25 to 50 loan applications per month, I'm going to answer the same questions over and over. And would I rather do that, or would I rather have some technology help answer the very questions that they need answers to? But does Daryl have to answer them personally by phone?
No,
not necessarily.
Yeah.
And that was the first aha moment to using technology for leverage.
Man, that's super. I tell you what, and it is such a great efficiency and effectiveness kind of a thing. And that's something that we've all got to work toward is becoming more effective and efficient. That starts with clarity, starts with knowing what you want and being real clear about that. But then it comes down to your strategy and what are you going to do to get to whatever it is that you want. And you better be doing it in the most effective and efficient way possible, because last time I checked, Daryl, there's still only 24 hours in a day and 7 days in a week.
That's right. Haven't been able to invent any more.
it just doesn't work. So if I'm not being effective and efficient with my time, and it's only me, I'm the only one that I can hold accountable for that. by George, I better stop and change the way I'm doing things.
Yeah. You know, Morris, it's funny because today the operative word that is struggling, a lot of sales folks and entrepreneurs are struggling with is this idea of overwhelm and frustration with all of the digital stuff that's available today, right?
Yep.
And so I always say that when we really break it down, we're all overthinking this. You don't have to be on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and TikTok and Twitter. You don't have to do any of it, quite honestly. As a matter of fact, I was on a call a couple of days ago, actually, and the gentleman says he's in actually financial service sales. And he said to me, you know, Daryl, I haven't done anything digitally up to this point. I guess I should start looking at it. And I said, why do you think you should start looking at it? Because you don't. Like, don't let the world push you to think you have to do something you don't want to do. It's always a choice.
Yeah.
However, here's what I find. Like, go back to the example where I was answering those questions in those emails, and then I eventually started putting them on YouTube in 2007. I just took the same questions every one of my customers would ask me or prospective customers would ask me. I just decided to duplicate my answers and do it one time. So I would shoot a video and or write the email. And I would just make sure it was available online everywhere at the time. It was a little harder back then, of course. But the point is we can remove the overwhelm and the frustration if we simplify the process. And a lot of it is already in our heads as experts. As expert providers of services, we already know the questions they're going to ask. We already know the questions they're not going to ask that they should ask, something I call a should ask question.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can put together your content structure such that you are answering the frequently asked questions that they're going to ask if they're interested in buying or, you know, if they're interested in solving the problem that your product or service solves, or the questions they should ask that they're not asking, which are actually better questions because that's going to really elevate your expertise, and put that in a place. It doesn't have to be in all the places. Put it in a place. And for me, I'm always suggesting that video, if the professional is amenable to video, because it is the easiest thing you can do is turn open your camera today, which has a better image quality than anything I ever used when I first got started.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, there's another whole conversation, but yeah, I'm with you 100%.
We live in amazing times right now. There is no excuse to not turn open the camera. By the way, do you need a professional background? No. Can you do it from your car? Yes. Do you need a tripod? It helps if you're already sitting at your desk, but I record more videos holding my phone in my hand while I'm walking on a walk. I do more videos sitting in the car when I'm heading to the gym dressed in gym gear, because if a thought hits me that is relevant to a larger population of my potential customers or client base or ideal customer, then while it's on the top of my mind, I teach all my clients, just pull out the camera and get it recorded. And here's the funny thing that comes back. I just had a conversation with an insurance company out of Georgia that I'm working with. And he says, Daryl, well, I recorded 5 videos last week and they all suck. And I, Morris, now here's the funny thing. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Did you distribute the videos anywhere online? He says, no. And I said, let me ask you a question. Then who determined that they suck? And he goes, well, I just know that. And right. And I said, so let me tell you what I told him. I said, let me ask you this question. So you didn't get any feedback from anyone in the real world that the videos weren't of good quality. He says, no. I said, then tell your inner critic to shut up.
Isn't that the truth?
Tell your inner critic to shut up and distribute the videos, because you're a 13-year professional. It doesn't matter that your energy wasn't exactly the way you thought. It doesn't matter that you didn't look at the camera the way I told you, you know, the way we teach you to do it. You put the content there. You'll get better. Just iterate as you go. So anyway, it's...
Oh, that's great.
Critic to be quiet.
That's great. That is absolutely wonderful. I follow a guy online who's a YouTube guru, and his company has a tagline that I just love. Are you ready? Here it goes. Just press record.
Oh, I know Sean.
Yeah, Cannell. Sean Cannell. Just press record.
Vegas. He lives in Vegas.
Yeah, he does.
We actually used to go to the same church.
I'll be darned. I love the guy.
I didn't know him at the church, but I know his business and his brand is here in Vegas. Yep.
I love the guy. Think Media. And I watch him all the time. Yeah. I watch him all the time.
Good dude. Good company.
just press record. He is so absolutely right. It's just the same thing when you're starting off in sales. Well, I don't know all the answers to all the questions, so I'm not going to call on anybody that I know because they might ask me something that I can't answer. Go talk to them, brother, because right. You're going to be able to help them and you're going to know more about stuff than they will ever know because you're prepared. So go. No, you're not a CLU and a CFP and a CHSC and a CSP and all the rest of that yet. You will be, but right now, go talk to somebody and help them figure out what their problems are and how you can help them solve those problems. And I promise you, you're gonna make some sales. If you sit at home and you study all the time, that's great. You're gonna learn a whole lot of stuff, but you're not gonna sell a whole lot, Daryl.
Yeah, Morris, I couldn't agree more. There was a phrase when I grew up and it was called knowledge is power. Over the years, I've challenged that statement and I've said that I'm not sure knowledge is power. I kind of use a little different variation of it and I say activated knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Meaning knowledge we've acted on is where the power lies, right?
Yep.
It's so we do have to get out of our own way and put some things in motion. And I think the other thing that we have to be, and of course, if you're going to be successful in the world of sales, you have to be willing to meet with outcomes. I don't like to use the word failures. I use the word breakdowns in my discussion in the world of Mindshift where I live. But the world of failure is a tough conversation for some folks. So I usually say, can we get comfortable with outcomes that weren't exactly what we expected? Meaning I wanted to make that sale. I thought they were going to sign. I thought they were going to become my client, but they chose to do something else. That is merely an outcome.
Yeah.
And the outcome isn't your identity. And
isn't
so if we can separate, we just have to silo these outcomes and then keep moving forward, understanding the process will eventually work itself out if we practice enough, right? If we, which is where the problem comes in. I only talked to 3 people in the last month. I didn't make any sales. come on, you know how it goes.
Yeah. It's like, what? Huh? Well, I didn't feel comfortable. Dude. Sweetheart, you're not going to feel comfortable just yet till you get out there and do it a bunch. I'm telling you, remember the first time you drove a car? Remember how uncomfortable it was to press the brake with your foot? And you remember how uncomfortable? How does it feel today? You got to go out there and give it a try. If you're not going to go out there and try, it's never going to happen.
Right.
Daryl, tell me this. As we're talking about sales, what do you see in the sales process today that digital really helps with? How does what you're talking about here, how does it translate to helping a salesperson become more effective and efficient and reach their goals?
It's a great question for the topic of sales, because this is the distinction that, you know, we have spent the last 11 years working on. I go back to my early days of thinking about what made me get started. It was part of wanting to get the information online so I didn't have to repeat myself over and over again. But I also realized this is what's really changed. If we get back to before the internet, and if some of your listeners are either early internet or before internet, the customer, the consumer had to take a step towards you as the professional to get the information, to get the understanding, to get the insight, to get the details. And we as salespeople were the gatekeeper to the prize.
Yeah.
Not just the application, but the prize. We were the doorstop, right? We were at the door. We met them at the gate. Today, the shift is the consumer has control of the entire journey by way of their phone or their mouse. And the shift that digital helps is if we recognize that the consumer at 11 o'clock at night, while your office is closed, while your underwriters are away, while your CEO is taking a nap, just like you're probably taking a nap for the evening, we call it sleep, that consumer has a problem that they'd like to solve in some way, shape, or form. Maybe your product or service can help, maybe it can't. But they're at the computer at 11 o'clock because they can't go to sleep. And it's a pressing issue. And the digital aspect of what we do and help clients do and help them understand is where are they likely to go looking for those answers? So in some cases, that's going to be Google. Well, going to be Google in some cases, right?
Absolutely.
But the other thing, though, is studies show that these folks are also scrolling social media late at night because they can't sleep, right? Maybe they aren't looking for a solution, but through the way that these platforms understand that person was on Google during the day, and now they're searching on social media, and because of technology, Google knows that they were on through their interest behavior or websites they clicked on. That data is now available through platforms like Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, etc. And so you can run very, very simple ads for $1 a day to start and just show up only to the people that had already started the journey of discovering your product or service, whether that had started on your website or in a more advanced way, they started on Google and they happen to be on Instagram at 11 o'clock at night while you're asleep. You could have your brand in front of them simply doing what? Answering a frequently asked question, not saying, hey, let's fill out an app right now. It's simply being a resource wherever they are. So I always say that in digital today, it's an expert's role or job or opportunity to show up where they are in an appropriate way. Because here's the thing, they have done 60 to 80% of their research before they ever contacted you. And that's the shift that is challenging a lot of business owners and sales folks today is to just relinquish the idea that we have all the answers, that they're going to go on the journey and they're either going to find it on YouTube University or they're going to find it on the blogosphere somewhere. They're going to get another competitor's ads. So our job is to participate in the journey wherever that journey lives. And again, you don't have to be everywhere to do it. You can just go where they might be most often, which today are like the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the LinkedIns. Figure out where your audience is likely hanging out. And you have an opportunity with paid media and those kind of things to show up in a very genuine way.
And I'm sure that there are those folks out there, especially in the financial services world, that are saying, but compliance is too big of a problem. And I don't want to go there because of all the compliance stuff that's going to be out there. Last time I checked, the compliance people will let you be digital. They just want to control what you say when you are digital. So use the approved content, but get something out there on those platforms. Would that be correct, Daryl?
Yeah, I think, no question about the idea of compliance. You have to know what your compliance team will allow you to do and what they won't allow you to do. But in my understanding, most of these companies today have a department that are creating the resources in advance for you to use.
Yeah,
it's your opportunity to build an awareness opportunity. And here's the thing, you take the piece of content they created. I like to say a quicker analogy. If I'm a local financial service professional and I'm here in Las Vegas, and I heard this some years ago when I was talking to a venture capitalist, and it was a very interesting conversation. We were at a conference and he was in our group and we were having this discussion, and he was asking me and my business partner who was with me at the time about our company. And we're in Nevada and he's in the Reno area, which is north of us. And he says, well, if you guys have been doing so well, how come I don't know who you are? And I said, and I'm thinking the logical answer was, well, you don't need our services, so you don't need to know who we are. And I don't know if that's what I said, but that was my thought process. That was kind of the energy of my answer. He says, I should know who you are, whether I need you or not. And I was like, and it hurt. It was actually a stinging little remark.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a bad conversation, but it was the remark of, how you catch a little bit of pride because you've been doing well and right.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get a guy who says, from his perspective, I should know who you are, whether I need you or not, which harkens back to the idea that we get taught in the early days of financial services. Right. We know that if everyone we meet has a sphere of influence of 200 plus people.
Absolutely.
And so when we think about this opportunity with digital, well, we can amplify how quickly we get to the person who has the influence of the 200 people. And that's where. That's the action that has to be. If we take the philosophy of I can go meet with one or two who have a network of 200 and I can get exposure potentially to 400, well, why wouldn't I want to meet those one or two people faster and meet them in 200s, meaning get the impression, get the exposure. And you can do it so cheaply. You know, back in the day, you know, we think about television advertising, and I'm a student of advertising and the history of it. And so in 1941, the first television ad hit the television screen by a company called Bulova, watch company, still around to this day. And it was during a Brooklyn Dodgers, Philadelphia Phillies baseball game. It was an 11-second video, which had no human being in it. It was basically an audio over an image on a screen. It's still on YouTube. If you Google it, you can find it. It's like 11 seconds, 12 seconds, I think. And so the thought process was, did Bulova really think that anybody was going to get up from watching the game and go buy a watch? And this is way before the internet, so they certainly couldn't have went to Amazon. So the answer is no.
Right.
The answer is they were doing what this venture capitalist kind of hit me with that day, which he's like, I believe someone, if you wear a watch, you should wear ours. And I'm just going to introduce you ours at this point in time, which is called a commercial in the game. Fast forward to where we are in this conversation, and that is we have the opportunity with our compliance and with the materials they've created to make an impression in advance of someone even needing us. And this is what we call one of the five stages of awareness in marketing. This is the unaware stage of marketing, whereas we're going to make someone aware who doesn't even know we exist about who we are, what we do, and how we could potentially help in advance of them even potentially needing them, which is a little bit outside the buyer's journey, but that was unaffordable. Television ads and radio and billboard, mostly unaffordable for more small businesses and sales folks that are entrepreneurs. But it's really affordable when you can do that with a dollar a day on Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, it is absolutely incredible. Daryl, I have really enjoyed this conversation. Would you come back and do this again with me sometime?
Morris, fun stuff, man. You and I are kindred souls, my man. I mean, I enjoy you. I enjoy your work, your online presence and what you're doing in the sales community, and your history in the sales community is just phenomenal. Be glad to whenever you'd like.
Well, I appreciate that, my friend. Thank you very, very much for being here today and for all your great things that you're adding to the industry today as well. We appreciate you, and we look forward to talking with you again sometime. And in the meantime, for everybody else out there, hey, y'all, go make it your best week ever. You got a chance. You can do it. It's in your bailiwick. It's in your control. Go out there and make some great things happen. Until next week, I'm still Morris Sims.